Hello, everyone, and welcome back to What the Folklore, Making Sense of Senseless Tales. I am your storyteller, Carmen.
I'm the crime weaver, Tyler. I almost forgot what I was.
I'm Gordy, and I feel like I need to shoot myself in the foot just a little bit here.
just to know that you're still alive?
I'm gonna take a bullet. Mm-hmm. This is a bad metaphor, but I'm going to take a bullet to kind of send out a warning shot.
Okay.
Just across the bow of our general listenership.
Yeah.
I have no title this week.
Oh, shit.
There is a reserve of them.
But you don't want to burn them.
I don't want to burn them all quite yet. So I'm turning over this one to you. Just like as a little glimpse of what happens.
What's in
if
store?
If people don't use this hashtag that I made up.
I mean, this is largely on us for not reminding again.
This is on us for not reminding. I just kind of want to remind people of the stakes,
mm-hmm.
and I'm willing to just like take a hit to do that.
Well, I just got an all points bulletin from our good friend John Waterbottle, who is true and real.
Yeah, of course.
He shot me. He and I DM back and forth. Mm-hmm. And he still uses hashtag whatamgordy, like, just as a goof, like, even though it's just between us.
Sure.
You know how you say hashtag to your friends out loud in real life?
Yeah.
And you don't expect it to actually collect onto Twitter.
I do it with the guy all the time. Have you met his family?
The water bottles?
They are a lovely, lovely family.
I'm sure they are.
They're the nicest people you'll ever meet.
Anyway, John Waterbottle has sent to me whatamgordy. The Chancellor of Socks.
Yeah, that's a great one.
I feel like Gordy's a chancellor a lot.
I mean, I like chancellor.
Like, more than average.
It's a good of kind of... What is a chancellor, exactly? I like it. It seems like a more fancy president
or
prime minister. It seems like a better version of that.
I think they decide what is and is not on TV.
The chancellor?
Yeah.
That's the official... That's what chancellors have done since the beginning of time.
They just kind of decide the programming.
Yeah.
It's important for a nation, I think.
For a while, no one knew what they were about.
Yeah, they were just crazed, sweating men tossing and turning in their beds.
Don't cancel Firefly.
Shouting Parks and Rec.
Fox, no!
Fox, don't do it again. Not again.
Oh, that's the wrong network for middlemen. ABC Family, sit down. Sci-Fi, don't change your name.
Yeah, they were largely misunderstood.
And then the day of TVs came, mm-hmm. when chancellors had mostly died out because people hadn't seen their use yet. And one of the last remaining chancellors in the world was like, yes, my time has come. And has slowly had to repopulate. And some years later,
we began anew.
We get Gordy.
And my domain...
Sock-based programming.
Sock-based programming. A lot of puppet stuff.
You gotta start somewhere.
Great. Thank you. Thank you once again, John Waterbottle.
Our true good friend.
I don't know what I would do without that boy in my life.
Guys, is John Waterbottle our Mr. Poopy Butthole? Because I feel like John Waterbottle has become our Mr. Poopy Butthole.
Our truest, goodest friend.
Yes.
Yeah, he is.
I think that's how you get pink eye.
What? Excuse me?
I don't want to mix water bottles and poopy buttholes.
Yeah. Not.
I think you get E. coli from that.
You could get a lot you of could things. Get a, from
yeah,
that.
It's a swath
it doesn't
of things.
Bear thinking about. What does bear thinking about is our real purpose here.
Folklore.
It is folklore. It's always folklore. At the end of the day, it comes back to folklore.
Yeah, we can try and move away from it, but we will be snapped back.
So,
like a rubber band.
I'm going to tell you how this is going to work, just so you have an idea
mm-hmm.
of what to expect over the next 50-some minutes. Carmen is going to read a folk tale, a fairy tale, to Tyler and I, one that we have never heard before. And this week, I believe, is one that a listener has suggested to us.
This week and for all weeks eternal until time ends.
For a while, that's what we're doing. And we're just going to try to unpack it as we go. We're going to address it as you would a modern story and ignore all of its cultural context and make up a bunch of stuff about it.
Right. We're not real folklorists.
No.
This is not an educational program. Go somewhere else. That's what you're here for.
You might learn stuff.
I want you to get out and go to another podcast.
It probably won't be folklore.
Yeah.
Before we begin, though, did you want to put out your bulletin at the top of the show?
Yes. So for the most part, with these stories, I am trying to move forward in time from our oldest listener suggestion that we callously ignored to our most recent listener suggestion that we callously ignored. But we are going to have to make an exception for that starting soon for What the Spook Lore. We have one fine listener who has sent us a swath of suggestions for What the Spook Lore. And while these are all very good suggestions and we probably have enough content for a full month, I would hate to make anyone feel left out and spend an entire month on one person's suggestions, no matter how beautiful a person they might be. So if you have spooky folklore and would like to throw your hat in the ring, we will take that. And if we can work it into a spooklore-tacular this upcoming month, we will. And if we get just drowned in submissions, we will save it for future spooklores.
We will take all your hats.
Yes.
They're ours now.
We'll put them in a cavern somewhere. A hat cavern. A spooky hat cavern.
But we'll display them nicely.
Yeah.
For company.
We on like skulls and stuff for extra spook. So, yeah, if you've got spook lore, go ahead and send that our way. If you've got other story suggestions, you are also welcome to send that our way. Just know it's going to be a while. So today, I've had to skip a couple of listeners through time. So Dave Helfrich, the Painted Turtle, I have not been able to locate an English translation of that yet.
Still on the hunt.
Yep. So if you've got one that you can just send us, that'll speed this along. Until then, I'm hunting down libraries and bookstores and things in my spare time.
The deep web.
So we've had to skip that one and move on to Carl with a C.
What's he got for us?
Carl with a C. Let me look at what Carl with a C has previously thrown our way. I think he was the one who wanted us to read Welsh tales because we're bad at those.
Yeah.
In kind of continuance with that theme, Carl with a C sent me an entire book of Vancouver folklore that I could read online. So I've pulled a couple stories from that. I think the only stories from that book that really work for us, because a lot of them are kind of short and a little bit more straightforward.
Are they at all related outside of being from Vancouver?
Like to each other?
Like thematically.
Is there kind of a Vancouver verse?
It's all sort of tales relating around the physical features of the Vancouver area. Like, here's a rock, and here's a story about how that rock came to be that rock.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that. A lot of the stories made a little bit too much of a logical progression for what we do here.
It's a good disclaimer. We can't use every suggestion.
Yeah, that's true. Like, we do have to figure out, hey, what can we goof on? So if your story is just a good story.
I mean, sometimes we can work with those, but sometimes we leave them to your discretion as storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
So I found the goofiest of the tales in here because a lot of them were a lot more serious in tone or just made sense. And so we will be reading two tales, one a more normal length and one kind of a short addendum to that one.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be reading The Sea Serpent and The Legend of the Lost Talisman.
All right.
Yeah.
So, bring it on, Vancouver.
These are sourced from the book Legends of Vancouver by E. Pauline Johnson.
It's my favorite Nintendo game.
What?
Legend of Vancouver.
Oh, yeah. E. Pauline Johnson was a Canadian writer in the late 19th century. Her father was a hereditary Mohawk chief of mixed ancestry, and she also she had a mother who was an English immigrant. So she talked to this one fellow, Joe Capilano, who was a leader of the Squamish from 1895 to 1910. So most of these stories are kind of framed in her conversation with this fellow and then this fellow telling her the story, which is also an interesting way to read folklore.
Conversational folklore.
Right. So the legends were told to me, Pauline Johnson, personally by Joe Capilano of Vancouver. The fact that she was able, she wrote a foreword in the book, the fact that I was able to greet Chief Capilano in the Chinook tongue while we were both many thousands of miles from home, I owe the friendship and the confidence which he so freely gave me when I came to reside on the Pacific coast. These legends he told me from time to time, just as the mood possessed him, and he frequently remarked that he had never, that they had never been revealed to any other English-speaking person save myself. So good job, E. Pauline Johnson, for taking this confidence and then translating it into English and publishing a book for us to make fun of now.
Yes. I know, me, Tyler, knows that...
Me, Tyler, you, Jane.
Me, Tyler, know that what you mean when you say... He would tell these stories like periodically when, like, can you read that back again?
Just as the mood possessed him.
When the mood possessed him. I know that that means like infrequently and probably at reasonable hours, but the crime weaver in me tells me that that means he would surprise her with stories.
Just yeah. Like sneak up behind her. He's like, once upon a time at 3 a.m., Joe, how did you get in my house? Okay, so, you guys ready?
Let's do it.
The Sea Serpent. Okay, so again, this was a story told within a story.
Yeah.
So, it's got a little bit of an awkward start, but one advice that is unknown to, and I quote here, the red man, even after learning many deplorable things from white men, is avarice. Like, they learned a bunch of other deplorable things, but they did not pick up greed.
That's our favorite thing to teach.
I know. Greed. We're it's the best
white,
at it.
Yeah, it's the white man's gift.
So long ago, in the inlet of the Fraser River, there was a sea serpent. And the sea serpent existed when the first white gold hunters came with their greedy clutching fingers. They had fought and murdered and starved and gone mad for the love of gold, treating their brothers as foes and like all of this stuff just to grab more of that sweet, sweet, shiny cheddar.
Yeah, that's us. That's our deal.
So this here that is about to happen is the legend of the Salt Chuck Aluk or the Sea Serpent. I have probably completely mangled that pronunciation.
So but we do our best.
During the first, we do our moderate to okay. We could put more effort in than we do. But during the first gold craze that hit this area, there were many Squamish men who went to be guides for the whites on the Fraser River. And they would bring back tales from guiding them of the horrific greed and murder done for the gold hanging out in this river. But all the young men, except for one, returned as they had gone, kind to the poor and the foodless and sharing everything that they had. One man, however, who went by the name of Shakshak, or the Hawk, came back with hordes of gold and money and gloated over them just like the white men did.
Uh-oh.
He loved his gold and his money better than food, his tribesmen, and his life. He would sleep with it under his head, he'd count it all day and cackle to himself, just like a white man.
Sounds like me and my Rolexes.
Me and my bag of Rolexes that I keep under my mattress.
I get up every morning and the Rolex fairy came and visited me.
And you count it and you giggle to yourself. It's like, I'm not sharing this.
I pinched it with my little gold crab claws that I call fingers.
So the whole tribe arose around him to help fight against this disease of greed that had taken him. And they said that to cure it, he must have a potlatch and divide his riches with those who were poorer and share it with the old and the sick and the foodless. He just jeered and laughed at them and refused and pet his gold some more and licked it a little probably.
Yeah, he said, no, that sounds bad. I have the thing now.
It's a very Scrooge McDuck kind of aesthetic that he's going for, I guess.
So, at his refusal, Sagali Tai, the creator god, spoke from the sky and told Shakshak that he had made himself a loathsome thing who doesn't help any people, and therefore is an outcast of his tribe and a traitor to the ancient laws of his people. As a result of this, he will now become a thing loathed and hated by all men. He will get two heads, because greed has two mouths to bite. One mouth bites the poor, and one mouth bites your own evil heart. These heads will be filled with fangs of poison that kill the hungry and your own manhood. And your evil heart will beat in the very center of your foul body, and he that pierces it will kill the disease of greed forever from amongst his people.
Are you taking notes?
So then this guy turns into a giant sea serpent with a hideous head resting on the bluffs at Brockton Point and another hideous head on a group of rocks just below Mission. So the tribe's people are stunned with horror because this horrible person has now just been given a great, powerful, terrible form.
Yeah, that seems
oddly fairy-like in its logic.
Seems bass-ackwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they loathed and feared the creature that sat day after day with its mile-long body blocking the entire river, like across. No one could get around it. So the chiefs held a council and the medicine men chanted, but the sea serpent never moved because it couldn't, as he had become the hated totem of greed and the love of money, which can't be moved from the white man's heart or a river, whether it's a sea serpent or greed, the abstract concept. So one day, a handsome boy of 16 approached the chief and reminded them what the creator god had said about piercing the heart. And like, hey, maybe this is the way out here. Like,
hey, who wants to try that?
That was a hint.
Is it him?
I would like to go do that. This boy was called Tinas Tai, or Little Chief, and he was well-loved. He gave his fish and furs and game and hikwa, which is a large shell money, to the boys who had none in the tribe, and he hunted food for the old people and tanned skins for those who were feeble.
Sounds like socialism.
I mean, essentially, yes. I think the book actually says something about the native peoples being born socialists.
Sounds un-American.
Good thing it's in Vancouver. We don't have to worry about
that's true.
It's close enough to be concerned.
Sure.
The red menace to the north.
Build that wall.
Build the wall. Build both walls. One and then the other, and then put a roof on it.
One of them's made out of snakes.
And then build a coast wall to keep the hurricanes out.
Wall, just build a whole room around America.
Just dome us.
And we'll put some lights in there. Hawaii. Some solar panels on top.
Sorry,
not solar panels. It's going to be oil-powered all the way.
Yeah, you're right. It's just going to be a big oil-powered whirly gig on the top just to have it. And that'll show them all. You only trade with us by knocking on the big metal door on the Canadian border.
And bringing McDonald's.
And just bringing the shit in on mules. All right.
So the tribe's people said, yeah, this guy's super awesome, and he's probably our best bet against a literal greed monster, because he is the opposite of greed. So it was decided that this kid will go fight the monster with his strongest weapons, which are his cleanliness and generosity.
Yep, in that order.
Those are mightier than the pin and the sword.
Cleanliness number one.
Those are pistols that he engraved with those words, right?
It's not bad.
That would be pretty good,
actually.
That'd
be kind of cool in a Western.
This is my six-shooter, cleanliness.
And generosity is a better name for a gun.
Generosity is a very good name for a gun.
Cleanliness is kind of a weird name for a gun.
Oh, no, you're like cleaning up the streets with your bullets.
You'd be a good sheriff.
Maybe. I think if one of your guns is named cleanliness, the other one has to be named godliness.
Sure.
And then it kind of works, because they're like, this is my gun, cleanliness. And I'm like, that's a weird fucking name. And then you pull the other one out and you say, but it's next to godliness.
Right.
And then it's,
you
and then
turn
it's fine.
You turn your belt a little bit and you show that the second gun is behind it.
Yeah.
Look how close they are.
And then it's like, kind of a good visual gag, but like not even that good.
But it's,
cowboys must have had a lot of time on their hands.
Before they riddled each other with bullets.
To think of stuff like that, I bet.
Can you name a gun generosity and then the other one squeaky clean? And is that good? Is that better? To get this concept in a Western gunslinging way?
Squeaky clean is a gun name?
Yeah. This is generosity and squeaky clean.
What goes with generosity?
Pew pew.
If not cleanliness.
Like what kind of trait
goes
with it?
Yeah.
If you're generous, you're probably also, nothing I have on tap is good. Angry? Are you mad? Not really. We can go through things you're not, for sure. Probably not mad.
This is my pistol, Mad Gun.
Like generosity kind of works. I feel like most of the other traits are going to be good ones.
Yeah.
And those make for kind of strange gun names. Like, and this is my other, like my other gun, just content with my life. Like, no, it doesn't quite work. Well-restedness.
I don't know that these things are directly linked to generosity.
They could be. I don't know.
Could you name it of mind?
Generosity and of mind?
Yeah.
I don't know.
This is my peace of mind.
Again, like if you're going for a certain kind of aesthetic on the Old West streets, then yeah, you could do that. If you want to be like the pun cowboy. Like, what was that? What was the kid with the guns and all like the Old West legends?
Billy
the Kid. If you want to be like Billy the Kid, but
with joke books,
which is like crappy gags. Sure, it's a good character. Maybe I'd watch a TV show about him.
That would probably diffuse most situations.
It might, or might just kind of like makes them think a second and they lower their guard, mm-hmm. and that's all the time you need
to just blast them.
I think you guys have had all the time you need in the Wild West, so we're moving on.
So he takes his guns.
Yeah, he takes his guns, cleanliness, and generosity, and he tells his mom, I'm going to be gone for like 4 days. I'm going to swim that whole time because I need to be super clean to fight this thing. And there's like a legend that's repeated throughout this book about swimming in natural waters as a way to cleanse the soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also just kind of your body.
Yeah, like just in and out, super, super clean times. So while I'm gone, I need you to put fresh furs on my bed every day, because even if I'm not here, if I know that my bed, body, and heart are all clean, I can overcome this gross greed monster.
Yeah, I like this guy.
Put burrs on his bed?
Furs. He's got the right idea.
Furs?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said burrs.
No.
I was confused, because that's not clean.
Yeah, instead of dumping spiky plant bits, just dump dead animal parts on the bed. Make sure they're fresh. Yeah, sure, said his mom. And so Tennis Tai strips down to nothing but a belt with his hunting knife in it and jumps into the sea. At the end of 4 days, he hadn't come back, but he could sometimes be seen swimming out to hunt for the exact center of the serpent.
I'm glad they checked.
You only get one shot at this.
Do your research.
So on the fifth morning, he climbed to the summit of Brockton Point to greet the rising sun, and this became a new part of his routine. So for weeks and months and then years, he would swim around searching for the heart, and each morning greet the sun on this rock and then plunge back in the sea and do that all over. So 4 years passed, and his mom kept replacing the bed furs every day, and then he found the heart. Good for him.
Yay.
Plunged the knife in.
Quest complete.
In the death agony, the serpent writhed through the narrows, sending its black blood through the river.
Down the river where they drink.
And its body shrank and shriveled until it was nothing but the bones of its back, which sank to the bed of the ocean. So it basically Skyrim dragoned and then sank. Tennis Tai swam homeward, and his clean body cut through the black stain of the serpent's blood and cleaned that up too, so he's just like a living pollution remover. He got home and he thanked his mom for keeping his bed clean while he was gone. She looked at him as only mothers could look and said, "Yep, I did that every day."
Fist bump.
So I go to sleep, rest now.
Fireworks.
The end. So I'm going to do a quick follow-up story, because there was one more that was kind of directly related to this, but told sometime later in the book, like one of the last ones told. It has two titles. I'm going to give you the second one after it's told.
Okay.
So this is The Legend of the Lost Talisman. Sea serpents hold an important place in a majority of the curious tales held in veneration by the coastal tribes. But perhaps the most wonderful part a sea serpent played was the great drama that held the stage of Europe during the stormy days of the first Napoleon.
Yeah, the first Napoleon.
That's what it said.
Are there more?
Well,
still waiting.
Yeah. We're waiting for the coming of a new Napoleon. In the telling of the story of Brockton Point and the boy who killed the monster, the one we just read, Chief Capilano had dwelt lightly on the fact that people who approach the vicinity of the creature and its bones become bewitched. And so their bones basically became disjointed and their brains incapable, and that the boy who had escaped from the serpent's influence had only done that by being super good and pure. So this is
and
just,
generous.
Yeah, this is just a power that these bones have. So turns out all successful native fighters and warriors carried somewhere about their person a joint of the sea serpent's vertebrae that the medicine men had thrown the power over so that they themselves were not affected by this problem. But if they brought it in the vicinity of their enemies would lose their minds and get their bones all whacked out.
Crazy bones.
And so this pretty much assured victory to the owner of the talisman without a problem. And there was one particularly effective joint that had been owned by warriors of a great Squamish family for a century. And it was so important that their totem pole was remodeled to be crested by a single joint of a sea serpent vertebra. So they like scrapped the old one. It was like, snake bone,
we're go. Starting fresh with our new magic.
So somewhere around this time with this family, through Russia, apparently, they had been hearing about Napoleon's early achievements in Europe.
Russia, you gossipy bitch.
And like as these rumors are spreading, a strange thing was happening to the Squamish family with the super cool bone.
Yeah.
There was a large bloodline, but the male portion of that was not there anymore.
Sure.
The only male member living was a very old warrior who had the talisman. He'd lived a full life full of successful murder.
Mm-hmm. Thanks in part due to Magic Buddy.
Yep. And on his deathbed, the warrior was surrounded by women of three generations, but not a single man in sight to pass on the talisman to. And he's telling the ladies, well, I can't give it to you because you're ladies. You're meant for peaceful lodge living and raising children and not punching the faces of our bone disjointed enemies.
Murder magic is men's work.
So in lieu of giving it to a lady, he says, my dying wish is that this sea serpent bone of infinite power and destruction is sent to Napoleon Bonaparte.
Listen, ladies, I have lived a long and rad life. Filled with death and destruction, and I have this bone to thank. Please take it to the baddest dude I know. Napoleon Bonaparte.
So he dies with this wish on his lips, and the older women look at him and this bone and the thing he's asked him to do with it. They're like, let's just bury it with him.
Yeah. Thank you, ladies.
But the younger women had a little bit more spirit of their generation and were determined to at least try to chuck this thing across the sea to France.
I'm not sure whose opinion I respect more in that situation. Because I like the ladies who said, fuck that, we're not doing your stupid errands for you, old dead man. This bone dies with you. But I also like the ladies who are like, I want to see what happens.
The younger ladies, the logic here was also like, why bury this powerful magic in the ground, let it live on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where the old women were like, nah, this is ridiculous. But in as though the universe spoke out with the young woman, yeah, that's cool. The next day, a small sealing vessel anchored in the inlet. So people come into Club Seals. All of them were Russian, except mm-hmm. for two.
Okay. One of them was Napoleon.
Two sailors were French captives of the Russian seal clubbers.
Ah.
So the women somehow like got the Frenchmen aside for long enough to tell them about, like, hey.
This crazy wish.
Hello, captive, almost slaves of these Russian seal clubbers. This old dead man over here had this giant snake bone that let him destroy all his enemies, and he wants that to go to Napoleon.
You know him, right?
Yeah, you're French. They all know each other. So just make sure you get that down. So the Frenchmen were at first afraid when they heard about what the talisman does.
Yeah, rightly so.
They didn't want to take it or be near it because they were afraid that their bones would get all janky and their brains would get all moopy. Which is what my brain just did when it said the word moopy instead of mushy.
Moopy's a good alternative.
I think it works. It communicates the idea. But the women assure them that, nah, dude, our medicine men took care of that. This only works on enemies. How it knows which ones are enemies is another question.
You whisper to it.
That the Frenchmen did not care to ask. So right. They take a snake bone on the boat. And the women watch their family's talisman leave on the boat with these French captives. And then they watch all of the Russians suddenly have severe problems with their bones and brains and like just kind of flop around uselessly on the deck, leaving two Frenchmen standing in a pile of Russians on a boat. And
crumpled.
And the Frenchmen sail out as conquerors of this Russian vessel.
We're Russian clubbers.
And good old Joe, the storyteller, says he doesn't, like, they're not sure what happened, but the Russians were probably useless and just thrown overboard at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So not too much is known about what happened with the Frenchmen after they left the sight of the Squamish people.
They didn't write back to say, did what you asked.
Dear strange women.
Snake bone secured.
Who thrust upon us the snake bone of a dead man. We handed it to our good best buddy, Napoleon Bonaparte. And he has conquered many enemies. Thank you and best wishes. We send you some brie. Hearts, hearts, hearts. French captives.
The French.
All of France.
All French.
Adieu.
I'd like one.
So not much is known about what happened with them, but they did somehow make it to France. And from the tales of Napoleon's victories that filtered back through, I guess, early Russian spies,
it can safely be assumed
that they felt assured that the talisman had made it into his hands, and he would have been the master of the world if a great calamity hadn't befallen him. He had lost the charm before Waterloo. He just, like, left it on a hotel, like, in the drawer and forgot to check it when he left.
Yeah, you hate when you leave your keys behind.
Yeah. Your keys to victory. And that's the end of this tale. I mostly told the first tale so I could tell you a Squamish story about Napoleon and his snake bone.
And his snake bone of destiny.
Yep. You two ready to discuss?
Sure. Hey, Creator God, yeah. Why?
I don't know.
Why are things like this?
Why?
Maybe he hadn't created something in a while. Like, world's been made.
You think he got bored and just wanted to...
So he did want to teach a lesson. He was very upset. It sounded upset when he was speaking. But he also wanted to make something. And what he had in mind was a giant snake monster.
And some people, like, work out their feelings through art.
Uh-huh.
And so maybe this was that situation. Like, what am I going to do? Because I'm mad. Giant snake.
It was kind of a hindrance to the rest of his people.
A little.
Yeah, like, they didn't have the greed problem. They recognized the greed problem. They're like, let's talk this out, buddy. And then Creator God's like, how about I block your river with a giant snake full of poison fangs?
I'm concerned about the pollution part and the clean boys... is complicity a word?
What do you
Complicitness?
Mean?
Complicitness? I'm talking about the first story.
Yeah.
But he did kill that big snake in the water.
Yeah.
And he was really clean.
Yeah.
And then it bled all into their water supply.
Right.
And I think that is not something that, like, a true clean boy would do.
Sure. Well, his glistening nude body did cleanse the poison as well, though.
That's true.
He sucked it all up into his pores.
Yeah, did he get all of it?
Well, that we don't know.
No, he did. He cleaned it up. The river was clear by the end of it.
How do we know?
Because the story said that even if I didn't write down like every word of that sentence.
But some of it had to get get downstream before he did.
I mean, it sounds like self-reporting metrics. Like, he comes out of the water and he's like, nah, I got it.
Everything's good.
It's all good. I got all the poison. Go drink. Go take baths.
So, do you think if we get, like, a super generous, kind, pure, clean human, and we dump them in the Atlantic, that will take care of some of our pollution problems?
Have we tried?
I am willing to do this. As kind, just...
Are you a clean enough dude?
I believe...
To get it done.
I believe that with my particular proclivities, mm-hmm. I can become that. With my many years of experience of cleansing
mm-hmm.
and hand washing, I think I can get to that point. I can swim for 4 days in clean water with two guns. So yeah, I'm willing
firing
to do
firing wildly.
If no one else steps up, I'm willing to do that. And we'll see how it goes. And if I don't make it, then we'll try something else. Mm.
Where'd the gold come from?
He just found it.
Just panning.
Well, they were being hired as guides
mm-hmm.
for the white greedy murder people.
Did the greedy white men vanish? And he returned with gold?
It's kinda into the fog.
Like they'd go out as guides and then they'd come back.
Yeah.
And so they'd come back and they'd say, oh, man, rough day at work. Like, 10 people got murdered over a little bit of gold. I do not understand this. And the chiefs and the elders and medicine men were like, this is probably bad. We shouldn't continue working for this company. It's just going to go downhill. But things were going fine. All their people were coming back ungreeted
mm-hmm.
until this one jackass got bit by the white man's serpent.
Yeah, I guess.
And the magical snake bone was specifically from this snake?
That was sort of the implication. I don't know that that's the case necessarily. Just the man started talking about sea serpents again, mm-hmm. and the lady who compiled this book was like, hey, you told me about these once before. Let me remind you of that in this same book.
Yeah.
Like 10 stories later.
I don't. It is certainly not my place to say, obviously. I don't want to tell a creator god how to do their business.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they did a bad job this time.
With the snakes.
This one's a goof. This is a gaffe.
Yeah. Like, you took for 4 years from this village one of their best providers
mm-hmm.
because another one of their dudes was a bad, terrible person.
Yeah.
You could just turn him into, like, a regular snake, and he's gonna have a rough time.
Or just smite him.
Yeah, like, I mean, smiting is good, but it is over pretty quick. Like, if you want some time for that lesson to really sink in, you don't want a fast smite. You want a slow, shitty snake life.
Build to the, oh, sure. Yeah, so not a smite.
Right.
Just a snake.
Just, like, crappy, crappy snake life. Like, a snake living in the cold climate of Canada.
Yeah.
Like, that's not going to be a happy snake time.
Not enjoying itself.
It's not going to have a lot of energy. There are plenty of voles around, but maybe they're all smarter than it.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I know what that's like. Just kind of going through life without a lot of energy
mm-hmm.
and a lot of voles around.
Yeah, that's been like the past week or so.
That speaks to me.
Just surrounded by voles, but none of the energy to strike them.
Yeah.
But
the loss of the river for a while and the loss of their greatest provider pales in comparison to the rest of the damage done by this snake existing.
Yeah, that's
specifically
true.
Its bones for generations.
Yeah,
around the globe.
Yeah,
and like the events of history were written in snake bones from Vancouver.
Yeah.
Maybe there's like...
You're right.
Maybe there's a secret society. Like, this is the Illuminati. It's not triangles and whatever crap.
Pyramid. That's just a... It's a... What do you call it?
A smokescreen.
Yeah. It's a red herring.
For the real Illuminati. Which has a collection of these snake bones and distributes them to who they want to be the victors in a war.
I like it. Like, I'm into it. Mm-hmm. Just kind of as a concept.
The snake bone society.
Yeah. I would like one of them. I'd like a magic snake bone.
Or a sea serpent society.
Yeah.
Which one sounds cooler? Like, which one would strike more fear into the hearts of someone discovering a secret society in a movie where they had to read weird maps and, like, old documents in candlelight at midnight?
The Greedy Snake Kids.
No, that's a Hardy Boys adventure.
That's how they recruit. They kind of...
I'm thinking, implant. Like, what's a cool enough name that you could write a Da Vinci Code-style book about it and no one would question how bad the actual contents of the Da Vinci Code-style book were?
A cool enough name to do that?
Yeah.
Like, I would say the Da Vinci Code is the title you want, because that's what happened with that book.
I'm for, like, a secret society.
Not a fan of the Da Vinci Code.
I'm not either. And there was a glorious day when I went to a Goodwill looking in the book section for something specific and found instead a shelf of, like, 20 Da Vinci Codes all shelved together because someone staffing that Goodwill had a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the Napoleon's Bones Apart with a Z?
I don't. I can't even process that. I can't feel anything about it.
Because the mystery was in his name the whole time.
Like, his name is the key to everything.
His bones are apart. Which bones? The snake bones.
Yeah, there's a good movie in there somewhere. I don't know exactly what pieces you have to put together to get to it. Mm-hmm. But, like, Napoleon plus magic snake bones.
Yeah.
That he uses to, like, win wars or something. Right? Is that what happened?
Yeah.
They gave him the bone. He was like, great, now I'm conquering Europe.
I mean, he'd been...
Good movie.
He'd been working on it.
Good movie.
I don't know how interested in the occult he was.
They were all interested in the occult.
Who isn't?
Every world leader has their occult phase. We know this.
I have to assume that he wanted more bones when he found out what they did.
What?
Like, he only just got the one bone. I assume he would want more of those bones.
I guess. I would.
Yeah.
Like, if someone gave me one, I'd be like, hey, are there any more of these?
What happens when you rebuild the whole snake?
Can we put the snake back together, and maybe I can just kind of drive that?
Drive it?
Or ride it, or just keep it, or whatever?
Shoot me into this space with this snake bone.
I do want a very big snake.
Mm-hmm.
I could do that.
I think a skeletal snake is less intimidating than, like, a skeletal anything else.
Do you?
Yeah.
I guess. There's not a lot to it.
There isn't, but it's like, it's got the spidery ribs, and a skeletal snake that could move, where you actually see the rib motions happening, mm-hmm. I think that would be a lot freakier.
It'd be weird looking.
Maybe. You just stand in front of it. Like, there's not a lot of it that can, like, hit you.
There isn't, but people are freaked out about snakes in general.
Mm-hmm. Nah.
And so you strip off the cute, boopable nose, and you just show them the mechanisms that make that snake go forward.
I just think that snake's fear factor goes down after they die, whereas most other things goes up. Like, if I saw an undead dog,
you'd be more afraid, like, of the undead dog.
Yeah, what's going on here? If I saw an undead snake, I think I would be less intimidated by it. Because I would realize how brittle they actually are.
Yeah, I think you're right. Are there... I don't know of any other animals that fall into that category where, like, they get less scary as a skeleton.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about it.
Maybe some fish.
Some fish? I don't know.
Like a goldfish.
Well, less scary than a goldfish is not... It's not much to clear. I don't know.
Like, if you take the evil noodle part away from snakes... They're not so scary to me.
The danger noodle that they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not that scary. They're adorable.
Like, I don't have a problem with live snakes for the most part. Like, unless they're in a situation where they can't actually harm me.
And care to.
Like, and want to, then, like, yeah. Don't do that. But then you should be afraid of the snake a little bit. Just like the ones that can't hurt you, great. Bring them over. I don't necessarily want to be in, like, an Indiana Jones style pit of all, like, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I'd like a big one. I would like to go swimming in very clean water. That seems like a big selling point from this story. Like, somewhere in Vancouver, there is a place with very clean water where you can swim. And that is always nice. Because chlorine can be rough, and salt water can be rough, and pond water is definitely rough. So.
So these may not be our greatest hits stories as a podcast, but it sounds like it was a pretty good like travel brochure for you, Gordy.
Yeah, like this is kind of like a personal advertisement. Well, an advertisement directed toward me personally. Like, yeah, there are a lot of things that yeah, I enjoy.
This was a like Google coded directed Gordy ad. Like, Gordy, travel Vancouver and be a clean boy and fight serpents.
This week's SEO is just for you.
Well, fight serpents, maybe. Fight and then keep.
Best a serpent, become serpent best buddies.
Yeah, there you go.
And super serpent clean boys.
Twist the world in your own image with its dead, dead bones.
That's all. That's all the things I have to say.
Carmen, parting thoughts?
I have none. Thank you, Carl with a C. I think that you are more of a scholar than we will ever hope to be.
But thank you.
Thank you also to all of our listeners. Special thanks to our Patreon supporters. We really appreciate your support. If you have any spook lore stories, send them our way, and
please
we
do.
Will shunt out the other stories we've callously ignored and continue callously ignoring them until after October in favor of your spooky, spooky tales.
If you have any other hashtag WhatAmGordies cooking,
get them going. Can't rely on John Waterbottle to save the day every week.
Fill up Gordy's bucket.
I'm just kidding. He's always there for us.
Always.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, John Waterbottle.
Thank you, John Waterbottle, always.
Thank you, the neon.
Thank you, the neon. That's a new one from last week.
We're what the folklore. And for whatever reason, that's how it works.
Somehow. This has been What the Folklore. Thanks for listening to our show. If you have any feedback for us, you can leave it either by Gmail or Facebook. Our Gmail account is wtfolklore@gmail.com, and our Facebook page can be found at facebook.com/WTFolklore. Feel free to send in stories if you have any particularly odd pieces of folklore or mythology that you would like to hear us talk about. Special thanks to the Brobdingnagian Bards for the use of their song Happily Ever After from their album Brobdingnagian Fairy Tales.